Before we get into this episode today, I would absolutely love it if you could take a second to rate and follow this podcast. It is probably not something that you've ever thought about at all. In fact, neither did I until somebody told me recently that the more you like and follow, the more eyeballs and ears we get on the podcast, leading to more incredible guests that we get to interview for you to listen to. So if you have 2 seconds today, please do this mama a favor and rate Mother Tongue and follow us on whatever platform you find your podcasts. Hello and welcome back to Mother Tongue, your extra set of eyes, ears and finger on the pulse for all parents around the world. I'm Marianne.
And I'm Sarah. We are your co-hosts. We catch up weekly, chatting with experts, people of interest and mamas from around the world to discuss everything relating to parenthood.
Listen in to hear more on navigating mamahood, the products we swear by and the experiences we've been through during pregnancy, motherhood, work and beyond.
Let's get going, shall we?
Louder.
Hi.
Yeah, you're allowed. You okay. Can stay.
I can stay.
You can stay.
We do need to fix that pair of headphones soon.
I know. I keep looking at it and then I forget. Sorry, my to-do list has been like, I'm just behind. I was saying yesterday, I love it, the irony of it. I was saying to Erin, who did my powder brows yesterday, which by the way, my brow game is strong.
She is magic. I told you this she for is a magic. Very long time.
I'm lying there and I'm complaining about how busy I am and how long my to-do list is and how backlogged I am. Yet I'm having my brows done. I was like, how long is this? She was like, about 90 minutes. I was like, what the fuck? The guest that we've got on today, I'm doing this course with her and it's been so eye-opening. I thought we'd get her on to share all her words of wisdom with you. And genuinely, it has been so bloody interesting, but so
time consuming,
so
right?
Time intensive. So there I am lying, having my powder brows done, listening to her talk to me about email marketing, the joys. And I'm now genuinely, I feel like the more I like scratch and like open Pandora's box, the more stressed I'm becoming. And I really need to start like scaling shit back and just actually starting from the basics. But I don't feel like I'm not. Do you know what I've also realized? That I don't think I'm an entrepreneur, Sarah.
Takes a lot to be one.
It's just, do you know what? I feel like I've given my years of hard graft. If only I'd taken a maternity leave, maybe I'd feel slightly more upbeat about, or like, what's the word? Like positive about growing and scaling a business. Because genuinely now I just feel so exhausted all the time. Like I just feel like having children has just like stumped the light out of me a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say having two kids is exhausting.
Yeah, and I just don't feel like I've got time to actually sit and give anything any time anymore. And I'd rather tick off things that are easy from my to-do list, so my to-do list looks shorter,
yeah,
than actually spend hours doing one thing on the to-do list that doesn't make me feel instantly gratified.
I know what you mean. But I think you can grow a business to make it comfortable without having to scale it mega
for sure. And I think also my biggest thing is forever I've always been like, oh well, I need to do this and I need to do it all now, whereas actually I don't need to do it all now. And I think the really interesting thing about Deborah's course is it's really been about bringing everything back to basics and starting from the beginning and actually putting together the basics and the foundations of a business in order to make it successful. And I think when I launched the PR agency, it was so different because it was a PR agency, and you'll probably feel the same going into what you're doing now. The building blocks are already there. It's not like we're reinventing the wheel.
No.
You're just kind of doing something that other people are doing. People are buying into you as opposed to they're buying into your agency, but your agency is you by default. So it's like setting them up isn't mad difficult.
No, it's not like you're creating something from scratch. No.
Well, and also, I mean, you get an email address, you get a logo. Like building an actual brand isn't as important. Mm. Having people recognize your brand or understand your brand, or also really understanding your target audience, isn't as important because it's a service and everyone kind of needs it at some point in their lives. I don't know. I just feel like this has been a massive learning curve. I don't think I've ever put together a business plan in my life. I don't think I've ever actually really put together a full marketing plan in my life. So these kind of things I still actually have never done in my life because I haven't kind of got around to finding the time to do them. But my God, yeah, it's been busy. It's been a wild couple of weeks. Wild. I'm kind of ready for the summer holidays now. And also Dubai has turned the heat up.
Up so much. I was driving back today and it was 40.5.
No, it was not, Sarah.
My car said it was and the app says it's something like 38 feels like 41. And I was like, yes, it bloody does.
See, that is so depressing. How did that happen?
And not only have they turned up the heat, they've turned up the amount of mosquitoes because of that rain. It is
really
awful. There are so many mosquitoes right now.
Oh God. So I haven't really noticed that, but oh, I have, so bad. I have noticed the heat, the sweat, like, you know, when you have to start being really conscious of the colors that you're wearing when you get up in the morning, because certain colors just show sweat marks, like, yeah. Nobody's business. It's literally like wear black or wear white and be done with it. I mean, what's up? Baby blue.
Big no.
It's a fucking killer when it comes to sweat matches, sweat patches. I mean, literally, I have a really lovely baby blue top that I love, but I have to just wear it in full AC.
Time to put that away.
Yeah, it is actually, really, isn't it? It's just like, go away now. We'll see you in December.
Yeah.
When it finally chills out and calms down. Oh, God. But yeah, and I feel like we're already gearing up to travel again. I feel like I've just got back and now we're going.
Yeah. And this is probably also why you feel so manic, because as we've moaned at, about a lot of times, there was Ramadan hours, so everything was shorter. Mm-hmm. And then there was Easter, and then there was Eid, and then there was rain. So we lost genuinely a month.
I know. And now we're going back to Europe a week tomorrow, and then back for 10 days, and then going again, and then back again for 2 weeks, and then going again, which really kind of terrifies me how much I'm spending on airfare. Do you know what? I think I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. The way to travel nowadays is pick one person, be it child or husband, and go with them and leave the rest at home. It's too much. It's too much expense. It's too much stress. It's too much everything.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, this is my debate as we were just having off air. Do I travel in 3 weeks' time with my husband and both kids to the UK and be in the UK for 2 weeks and then have a wedding in Scotland and fly back, which means taking Bodhi out of school for 10 days. However, he is FS1 and it's not mandatory and it's the only time I can do that. Or do I fly a week after my husband? However, that means flying solo with two kids. If it was Bodhi, absolutely fine. Almost four, sits, happy, easy. Blake, 18 months old. Feral.
The worst age.
Worst. Doesn't sit still. Will not nap. Cannot reason with. Cannot talk yet. Screams. Growls. Wants to walk around constantly. Not sure I can travel with two. But I can't leave one at home for that long. And I can't send one with Sam and not see them for that long either. No. So
no, it's
I'm
a really,
stuck.
It's a really hard conundrum. I would say take them out of school and go with your husband. That would be my top tip. Maybe we should open it up to the universe. I mean, guys, if you have any tips for Sarah, please do send them our way, because this is, so what are the dates?
The 15th to the 28th.
So you'd be taking
10 school days plus weekends.
Okay. 10 school days.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Wait, actually, I guess, so that's 2 weeks out of school.
Pretty much. Yeah. Exactly that.
Pretty much. No, it's exactly two weeks out of school. Okay,
a lot. He loves routine. He loves school. I don't love flying with two kids.
I would just take him out of school. Genuinely. Also, it's going to be so hot here. What are we going to do with
him? Well, yeah, no, I'm
Park life is nearly over. By the way, when was the last time you went to soft play? Because I genuinely don't remember. And we're coming back round to soft play era.
We did soft play. We did Cheeky Monkeys not long ago.
Did you?
Like 2 weekends ago.
Oh my God.
Because there was a reason.
Eid?
I think
boredom.
No, I don't know if we'd exhausted the pool or the pool was shut. There was a reason why we decided to do Cheeky Monkeys. I think it was so hot, and so we went. And also, they run different directions, and it was crazy.
How was Cheeky Monkeys?
It's like full workout. I was sweating.
Yeah.
Chasing the two of them.
See, could you not leave them yet? I guess you couldn't leave Blake.
What, see, I here.
Not leave them at soft play, but I mean, like, watch them from afar. Like,
no, because Cheeky Monkeys is like quite a lot of levels, goes up really high.
Could you leave Bodhi?
Yeah, but he will not let you leave him. So Sam was with Bodhi, I was with Blake, and then we'd swap. We were just in different parts of soft play the whole time.
Sounds absolutely manic. Fucking awful.
But then this is my other debate. If we leave here because it's too hot, it's just going to be freezing in the UK, and it's the opposite issue.
It should not be freezing. I mean, they're having all their shit weather now. So yeah. I hear. So hopefully come the end of May, you'll be fine. It'll be blissful. It'll be pub garden weather. It'll be great.
Not with two kids, it won't be.
No, but leave them at home with your parents or the in-laws. It'll be great. It'll be great. Anyway, enough from us. We have a great episode this week. I say this every week, but every guest is great.
No, but Deborah is great because not only do we go through the business side, but we also go through the motherhood side. And I think she's very much an open book in this episode. And it's quite emotional.
It is.
And very interesting listen.
A really interesting listen. And we bloody love it. So we hope you do too. So I think, Sarah, without further ado,
let's get going, shall we? Today's guest is an expert in business mentoring, positive mindset, and health coaching. She has set up two successful businesses alongside helping other companies with their business strategy and their brand. Not only is our guest a businesswoman, but also a mother juggling the motherhood and business balance. We are so incredibly excited to welcome Deborah Henning to Mother Tongue. Deborah, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I'm actually very excited about this chat. I'm just going to give you all a little bit of background. Also for Sarah, because I feel like you don't know a great deal about this. So sans sans. I'm actually doing a course with Deborah at the moment. So I'm feeling quite excited about this chat. I feel like I need to also try to not blend it to be like a personal therapy session for myself. So if at any point I go off on a massive tangent, Sarah, just rein me back in. But yeah, no, it's been, God, I think what, 3 or 4 weeks now? I feel like I know you pretty well, Deborah, but everybody else, including Sarah, does not. So can you start by telling our lovely listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So my background was in fashion. So I stayed in fashion for 20 years and I had a fashion brand. I worked at multiple brands, Alexander McQueen, Sass & Bide in Australia, Ghost in London. And then I started my own fashion label. And I was like, you know, 20 years old, super naive. And I thought, yeah, I can do this. I'll start a brand. And off I went into the world of fashion and started exploring what it'd be like to have your own business at 20 and also know not that much about business and also not that much about fashion. So you can imagine the learning curve that I had there, which was fairly steep and expensive. I still have that fashion label. It's still like my first labor of love, to be fair. Still part of my life. But my God, it's been an emotional roller coaster. I moved the brand. I had the brand in London and then I moved over to Dubai and I had an opportunity to be here and I thought, okay, you know, why not? Let's try. And I got here and I realized that the market's completely different. You know, when I got to Dubai, it was 15 years ago and the market was different. Like there was no pop-ups, there was no small brands. There was just big like Dior's and Bloomingdale's and things like that. There was no even conversation about local brands, never mind like actual brands being in stores. So I knew that I had to do something completely different and I knew that I had to be strong out of the gate. I'd also learn a lot about the mistakes that I'd made in the first 7 years of the brand in London. But that being said, I was still fairly successful. Like I had a store on Carnaby Street for a while. I was in the newspaper. I was in Vogue. Like things happened. I went to London Fashion Week. Like it was good, but I would have done things a lot differently. So when I came to Dubai, I started again and I learned a lot of things about, you know, launching a business properly. I did a business course with one of the Dragon's Den guys. And I did that for a year. I flew back to London once a month, every month for a year. And I was trained by him. And that gave me a really good basis for what to do differently. And then I did that in the UAE. And I launched that brand to much, much higher success. Like it was a completely different ball game. You know, I got awards. I won a trip to go to London Fashion Week. I went on a private jet. I did a collaboration with the St. Regis and the Maldives. You know, loads of really cool stuff that otherwise wouldn't have happened. I got into Harvey Nichols. We did an exclusive event there. Like really, it was a game changer in terms of learning business and doing it with absolutely no knowledge of business whatsoever. So when I say I've lived it, I really have lived it. And that was my first product-based business. And then that somehow merged into people wanting help from me to get them to launch their own businesses, which then turned into a consultancy, which I didn't plan at all. But then all of a sudden, I had so many people asking me to help design their collections and build and develop their products. And that turned into big, big retailers asking me for that as well. So I actually opened a consultancy and started doing service-based business as well, which was amazing. And because I had the knowledge of setting up the business, it was almost like a cut and paste. Like I know what I'm doing now. I know how to build the business. I can just apply this to services instead. And I built that in 18 months, I built that into a 7-figure business. So it was really nice because I was like, oh, I know how to do this now quicker than I did the first time. And then I realized the difference between product and services. And then, you know, fast forward another 7 years and here I am today helping people go through that process so it doesn't take them 20 years and they can do it in much, much, much less time without the hassle that I went through and the heartache and the headache and the pain and the crying and all that stuff. So I help businesses now do that. I have a 10-week program and I help businesses with business strategy one-to-one as well.
Wow, there's some incredible achievements there. So now you say you're helping other people with their businesses. So can you tell us a bit about how you do this? Is this like workshop-based? Marianne said she was doing a course with you.
I understand what it's like to be a startup. And I know that budget is difficult when you're beginning. And I know that it's not easy to know what to spend money on. But what I do know is that you need to know about business. And so I built a program, which is a 10-week program, which Marianne is obviously on. And we go through all the steps of building a business. Like it's all the foundations, all those bricks that you need to put in place first. And what I see is the same things over and over again that businesses are not doing or doing wrong. So this kind of puts people on the right path. And then from there, they can build successfully quicker. And it's at a price point that is absolutely value for money for a young startup. And then if people are already started, like I have clients that are one-to-one clients that I work with that are already started, they're already established and they're in growth stage. And so I do strategy for them too. And a lot of that is launching in the Middle East, for example. Like I have brands from Norway that are building and launching their businesses in the Middle East and they want to grow and expand. So it's like the next level is one-to-one.
So I have a question for you here because I ummed and ahed about joining the course for a really long time. Fundamentally, because I was like, why do I need to do this?
Yeah.
How, yeah. Like, I feel there's lots of people out there who are like this. I have launched a business already. I mean, do we call it successfully? Like, it's not doing badly.
Yeah.
You know, we make money. It's growing. Mm-hmm. It's never something I wanted to turn into a big corporate agency. But when I started, I had a friend who worked in marketing and he was like, you need a business plan. You need to do this. You need to do that. And I was like, no, I don't. I'm just going to go do it and I'm going to see what happens. And that's how we started. And we've changed and adapted and grown. And it's been a real journey, but I never needed any of that. I didn't. And so when I came to this point where I was like, right, I want to grow and scale Mother Tongue, I was like, but why do I need all this stuff? Like, why do I need to understand my target audience? Why do I need to do all the back work? Can you explain to someone out there who is like me, why? Why is this so important?
Why don't you explain? Because now you know. Because you're the one, right? You're the one with all the, oh, I don't think I need it. But okay, we're only halfway through it. But what have you gained in those 5 weeks that has been eye-opening to you that you wouldn't have known otherwise?
From a Mother Tongue point of view, it has been massively eye-opening because firstly, I've never even looked into what anyone else is doing in the market and where there's the gap and where we can kind of slot in to make a difference. I've never really given our target audience a proper think. It's always been like, oh, well, it's mums.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, that's just very generic, Marianne. And also it's made me rethink everything that we've done in the past. So I always wanted to attract a global audience. Whereas now I'm a bit like, why are we going after the global audience when we haven't really tapped into home? So it's really turned everything on a head for me and made me actually have to think about the business and the foundations and the direction. And I've seen massive value in it for sure. But still, if I'm going back to my first agency, the PR agency, I'm still a bit like, now, would I need to do this? So if there's someone who's wanting, because again, comms, I'm not reinventing the wheel. With Mother Tongue, I am trying to reinvent the wheel to a certain extent. Mm. But when it comes to your bread and butter, communication, advertising. I mean, Sarah's actually in the process of setting up an agency at the moment. Yeah. Like, why should someone like Sarah, who's not reinventing the wheel, no offense,
I'm taken.
Why would something like this be very valuable?
Because that's the whole point. You're not reinventing the wheel. So if you just cut and paste and cookie cut like another business and put it in the market, who's going to care? It's like they're just going to go to their existing brands, right? They're just going to go to the people they already know, they've been working for whatever year, unless their pain point is so high that they hate their agency and they're looking for a new one, or like the money's completely less and then is that a good business for you? I don't know. Like there has to be a huge pain point for a client to shift agencies. And so it really has to stand out. It has to stand out in the market. We are completely saturated with brands. We're completely saturated with services. And it's like, how do you bring your unique stamp to this world? How many more Instagram accounts can we have that are doing the same thing? You know, and at the end of the day, fundamentally what this course does is it really helps you understand who you are, what you do differently to everybody else, who you are in the market, and how you can utilize what people are still struggling with in the market that's not being covered yet. And then market that to above and beyond what you would have been able to do alone without doing that information, that without doing that research. Because what people always do is like they start a business and like they just go out and hope that they can find clients. But what this does is plans how you can find clients. So it actually helps you build the business more long term. It gives you a strategy for how to get those clients and how you're going to go about it and how you're going to build that longevity into the business instead of I'm just going to go out and build a brand and hope for the best. Because you might be that you've probably been one of the lucky ones, but a lot of people do that and then fail because of mindset, because they can't handle how up and down that is. Depends on their circumstance. So if you're alone and you've not got someone paying for their school bills and this and that, it's impossible because you can't deal with that level of uncertainty. Whereas when you have a strategy and a plan and you know where you're going with this, it's a different ballgame. It's like, no, this is going to work. And once you've got that mindset in place, you can actually make it happen. And that's the difference, is that going with a plan and a strategy will change the longevity of your business and make you more profitable. Hands down. Like, I'm not even, won't even argue about it. Like, I've been through it and I know it and I've seen it firsthand. And I see businesses time and time and time again doing the same mistakes. And it's like, it's just planning and strategy and knowing what you're doing differently and how your target audience needs you and how to speak to them. Because if you're not doing that right, you're not going to have enough clients. If you've not got enough clients, you've not got a business.
No, and no money, which is not what we want.
And we need money.
Yeah, we do. You talk a lot about mindset. And again, mindset is something I've never really thought about, to be honest. And very early on in the course, one of the, you know, foundations was mindset. Why is mindset so important?
I'll tell you a quick backstory of how I realized that mindset was so important. So I was married before, I was married for 10 years, and I was married to someone who didn't have the same outlook, let's say. So vision was different in his eyes than it was to mine. So when I went to my husband at the time and I said, you know, I want to have a business in 3 locations around the world. I want somewhere Mediterranean, I want somewhere snowy, and I want somewhere warm that I can move around. I want to be able to work online. Like, this is what I want for my life. Like, I don't want to be like stuck in one place. I want to do this. Like, I had this vision like maybe 10 years ago. And he was like, that's impossible. You can't do that. And I was like, cool. That's really helpful. That's what I was dealing with on a daily basis, is like someone that couldn't see the vision and that was affecting my mindset to the point of deterring me from my goals. And same person, when I said I'm going to start the consultancy, also said, do you think you can do that? Like, do you think you can, like, do you think you can do, like, deal with these people like Manjun Alfatayim? Anyway, that was probably the last conversation I ever had with him, because after that I left. And then I built a seven-figure business in 18 months. So my answer to his question was yes. But the point of that story is that you're the sum of the people you spend your time with. And I learned that over 10 years. And that relationship gave me such clarity on how it affects your life to be around people that are not aligned with your vision and your goals and the way that you want to live your life. And also that they can bring you down and they can actually turn you in a different direction. And that for me, when I there was a huge turning point for me. I went to Bali alone and it was the first time I'd been alone in 10 years. And I could think for myself, and I could go on about this subject for a really long time, but you know, being in a detrimental relationship really played with my mindset, and there was gaslighting and manipulation and stuff like that, and I didn't really know who I was. And in these 10 days I got the opportunity for the first time in 10 years to think for myself, and I realized how much needed I needed space to think for myself, and I realized how much that was being manipulated by another person. And so after those 10 days, it kind of changed my life, because I was like, I can't go back to to being like this. I need to think for myself and me, I'm like a strong, independent woman as well. So to be, find myself in this situation. And so I came out of it and I'm like, okay, I need to make changes here. And so I left that marriage and I realized that I'm going to have to be with someone that doesn't thinks in the same track that I think. And therefore I'm never going to let that affect my, you know, I'm not going to be in and around people that are like that again. Then the other thing that I learned was after I came out of that relationship was that I had to reprogram myself. I'd learned so much day in, day out to think a certain way because I've been like, you know, I don't know how to explain it. It's like mind track is like this and I had to reprogram it. So I had to learn how to do that. How do I think again that anything is possible? How do I think again that I don't have to do things this way because someone's telling me to do it? And so I had to learn a technique to do that. And therefore now I teach that to entrepreneurs because if you're struggling with something, there's a way to get out of it. You don't have to suffer with it.
I mean, amazing to be strong enough to identify, you know, that this person doesn't serve you anymore and you really do need a positive mindset, but you need people around you that believe in you, that push you out of your comfort zone and support you. And I think, you know, a lot of people often doubt themselves and you need those other people around you to, you know,
push you.
Yeah, definitely. And tell you that you can do it.
Yeah. You need to be able to switch your mind to be able to get you out of your funk if you're in it. And then also if there's someone around you that can help support you during those times, then it's a complete game changer.
I'm just going to jump into that because there's what you said there is very, really important. Being pushed outside your comfort zone is really important. But on the flip of that, especially as a parent, I think knowing when you're being pushed and when you're taking on too much is a really fine line. Mm. And I'm all for being pushed, don't get me wrong. But then I've also experienced the other side where I've pushed myself so far I've burnt out. How? Because I, for one, have always been like, the sky's the limit. You can achieve whatever you want to achieve. And I genuinely have always thought that until I became a parent. And then adding motherhood onto an already full plate has led to burnout many a time. So now I'm almost having to retrain myself that, you know, not everything is possible right now.
Yeah. Changes your world upside down, let's be honest. And like we get the brunt of it. Let's be fair. You know, like women have to do a lot more. It's certainly in those early years, like, you know, you are the food maker and the, you know, the comfort and only sleep with mummy and all these types of things. So the burden on you is much, much heavier. So to answer your question is how do you balance that? I think some of it comes with maturity. So knowing that you now have this other responsibility and other job that you have to take care of, but also in terms of business from my experience is choosing a business that works for you and not choosing a business that just you doing it purely out of, oh, I feel like I'm going to go and make this, you know, like planning it and strategizing it and saying, okay, I had a meeting yesterday with a client and we did some numbers and it's like, yeah, this is not going to make you enough money. Like you'd have to work 150 hours a week to make this make money. So let's do something else. Because at the end of the day, what's the point in doing it for 7 years and then realizing, actually, this doesn't make any money. Like, let's do it in the first 3 months and then change the plan, right? Yeah. So that's what one of the huge things that I've learned about business is that you can make those, if you've got a strategy in place, you can make those decisions earlier on to save yourself like a decade. And I think people underestimate what they can do. They overestimate what they can do in a year and they underestimate what they can do in a decade. So like people think they can do everything now and it's like, rah, 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 rah. But actually, what are you doing long-term? What are we trying to build in the future? Because if you think more long-term, you're more likely to be successful. If you're only thinking about what you can achieve this week, then it's just going to mess with your brain, you know? Whereas if you think, actually, in the long term, I'm building this and it's taking me time. And therefore, in the next year, I'm going to have this completed and it's going to be the thing that I want. Instead of stressing yourself out, thinking it has to be done this week, we put too much pressure on ourselves.
I also think, on the flip side of what you said, I think after becoming a mum, and it's probably working for somebody else, it's going back into a job and being like, having imposter syndrome and can I do this? Am I good enough for this? And trying to juggle it with, you know, switching off mum brain and getting into work mode. That I think is something that a lot of mums also struggle with.
The anxiety and the everything.
The guilt.
Yeah, the guilt, the anxiety, not feeling yourself, not like feeling like your body's not right. Like there's so many things that affect, that women have to go through that men, I don't even know how they got such an easy ticket, to be honest.
I know.
So what is your absolute favorite go-to motto in terms of business to have this positive mindset?
I just think you can, I'm not sure if this is an official motto, but I just think you can dream it and then do it. I love the idea of being able to have your own business, think whatever you want, and then think, okay, let's do it. Because everything can be planned. You can strategize anything. Like, okay, as long as you can think it, you can work back and figure out how to do it. And I love that about business. I love that is that you got the freedom to just have the vision, whatever it is that you want to do, you can do it. It's just a mindset and then a set of skills to get it done.
Yeah.
I love that.
No, that's nice. I agree with that. And I love that. And do you know what? I genuinely think that is how I felt until I had kids. And now I did. But what you said there about planning and strategizing, that's the bit that I missed. I'm just like, okay, yeah. Well, we're going to do this and we're going to do it today. And there's no like, let's just wait and think about this for a moment.
Yeah. And if you've got a plan, then you feel more confident.
Yes.
And you feel more confident you can get it done and you can work back with yourself and time management. And then you can be like, right, kids are out this time. So what can I do in 6 hours?
Yes.
Right. And then in 6 hours, I can do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And if I do that 5 times a week and I can achieve this. Whereas if you don't think about it, it will just eat you. Like the week will eat you like, and then you're like, oh my God, how's it Friday? I need wine. You know, like,
yeah,
it just rolls like that.
I want to come on to time management in a moment, but before we go on to that, I wanted to ask about creativity. Because again, I think so many mums suffer from this because they're juggling all the many plates and time is very precious. I struggle to find space to be creative. I really do. Like I struggle to focus on one thing for longer than 15 minutes at a time. I'm constantly jumping from my emails to my phone, to my kids, to the car, to a meeting, to this, that, and the other. And I rarely, unless I take myself off on holiday or on a beach day or something, I rarely have time to think and be creative. What tips can you give people like me?
Block it out. Put it in your calendar. Block it out. It's as simple as that.
I know, but you say that and then an email comes through and I have to send that email.
Oh, we need to get rid of all those devices.
Turn your emails off. Switch your phone off. One morning a week on a Monday morning, whenever your kids are out and you know that they're not going to, you know, be back in, mummy, I need a biscuit or something. You can be like, switch your emails off, switch your phone off for however long you feel comfortable, 1 hour, 90 minutes, whatever it is, do it once a week. Try it.
Yeah.
Because we are addicted to answering phones and we're addicted to answering emails. Bing! And you're like, oh, you know, so it's just a case of switching it off. Like the world's not going to end if you don't respond in 90 minutes. And same with WhatsApp, like it's fine. So give yourself the boundary that you need to be able to get done what you want, focused work. I know that we've talked about the Pomodoro technique, which is a smaller version of this, where you put, you know, put your headphones on, use binaural beats on YouTube, set a timer for 25 minutes, turn off your phone, switch off your emails and focus on one task. After 25 minutes, set an alarm, 25 minutes, turn your timer off, get up, have some water, walk around, take 5 minutes of sunlight, come back, go again if you need to. Mm. So that's like a short break. Like I do that with like accounting, like, but I have to, right? Because I don't want to do it, but I have to. And if I do 3 blocks of those, I can get it the month done.
Yeah,
that's all I need to do. And that's it done. And it's the same thing. It's like focusing on the thing that you need to get done. And also leaning into your environment. So whatever makes you feel most creative. So I like to go out and like take a big notebook and go to somewhere, you know, with open space and like a nice coffee and like put myself in a place where, oh, this is really nice. Oh, and I can spend a bit of time just with my brain, like letting it go, you know? So I think that, you know, doing that and making your brain have a dopamine hit behind it of going somewhere and enjoying it as well and not just being maybe in your living room also gives you the extra benefit of dopamine. So it rewards you for doing it.
Okay. I'll give that a go. Genuinely.
You know what it is? It's just the balls to switch off your mobile phone and your email.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Because you can do it. You're just choosing.
No, I know. I'm very strong-willed in certain areas of my life, but I'm very weak and pathetic when it comes to my phone and my emails. It's actually quite sad.
At least you know, that's the first step.
Yeah, no, trust me. Yeah, it's been a work in progress. Time management is another really big bugbear of mine. And I've always been like, oh, Marianne, you're so organized. Like, I'm on the ball. I can juggle all the plates and get shit done. It's never been my problem until someone comes to work with me and they're like, you're a fucking mess. You're all over the place. What is wrong with you? And turns out my time management is appalling, as is my organization. So how can we get more organized and how can we manage our time better?
I'm going to say the same thing. It's planning. So what I do is on a Monday, I get up and I get up a little bit earlier than normal. So I've got an extra 45 minutes to sit down for the week and think about what I'm going to do. Again, it's the same thing so the week doesn't get away from you. Like as soon as you don't plan, it's going to get away from you. So same thing in business. Like if you don't plan, you're going to miss that sales opportunity. If you don't plan, you're not going to have that conversation with that person that might lead to something else. So it's the same thing as like letting the week get away with you. If you just hope for the best on Tuesday and try to get something done, it's not going to happen. If I sit down, I go, right, I'm going to give myself 90 minutes untapped every day. Like no one's allowed to speak to me and no emails. First 90 minutes of every day. If you do that for 5 days a week, imagine how much more productive you're going to be. Then give yourself half an hour to have lunch. Like leave your computer, let your brain digest. I wouldn't eat whilst working because you need those creativity breaks to let your brain think about something else that's irrelevant. And I find creativity can pop in there as well. But other than that, it's just about really nicely planning your week and planning in time to stop, planning in breaks.
Okay.
Planning in breaks and not eating at your laptop is a big one for me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm dreadful.
Do you know what I've noticed as well that about Dubai, like the way that it's set up is that we're accustomed to just working like all the time. You know, the kids are out or you've got a nanny. So therefore, or it certainly was for me, it was like, right, up, bag, school, rah, drop off, come back, nanny, do this, clean this, do that. Rah. It was like this schedule all day, like this militant, you know, routine. And it gives you all this opportunity and all this space to work, but then you don't stop. And it's like, well, hang on, we just need a bit of time to let your brain just calm down throughout the day. So those mini breaks are super important to be able to release that creativity, you know, and not just be on full throttle all day. So I think 90 minutes in the morning without emails and WhatsApps will do you wonders. And then stopping for lunch and actually consuming food without anything, like have a conversation with
someone. I think here as well, we're very, you know, everything's so easy. So you get your food delivered. So you don't even leave the house. You don't even go, you know, out, get fresh air or do anything.
No, it just comes straight to your desk. You sit there and you continue to work while you eat. That's what I'm saying is like, we've forgotten how like fast paced Dubai is compared to everywhere else in the world. And I think we need a little bit of that normality back again. You know?
I agree.
I want to move on to motherhood now because you are mum to a little boy. So can you just tell us a little bit about your motherhood journey? Like, how is it being mum?
How old is he?
He's three. Three years and 3 months. He's amazing. I absolutely love it. Just jumping back to the previous story, one of the biggest drivers for me to leave my last relationship was that I would never bring a child into something that I wasn't happy with, some relationship that I wasn't content in, that I didn't see the vision in. And because of my childhood, that was an absolute no for me. So like when people say, oh, you know, you had, well done for having the guts to do it, it was because I wouldn't bring a child into it. So that was the main motivator for me to leave that relationship. And thank God that I did, because we would have killed each other. You know, I learned what I needed to learn from there. And then my motherhood path was meant for a different person. And so I took a chance, because when I left that marriage, I was 36. So, you know, I definitely had I might be giving away motherhood opportunity here. But in the end, you know, life surprises us. And, you know, I already actually knew my current husband, but it moved very quickly because we knew each other, but that wasn't planned. We were friends for a really long time. And so we then got pregnant after we had a miscarriage the first time, and then we got pregnant the second time. And that was 3 years ago. So yeah, I struggled really a lot with the business. Another, you know, kind of little bit of spice for the story is that my husband decided when I was 9 months pregnant to quit his job and start trading the stock market. So I was running a you know, successful design consultancy, and I had my brand on the side. I had a team of girls. Oh, and it was COVID as well, so the whole world shut down. My husband quits his job, and I'm about to give birth and still have to run a team of, you know, I had about 18 months runway in my business of like work we had to do. So I just kind of let that roll while I had a mini breakdown, and he, you know, was working not only the stock market, but the Australian stock market. So he was working through the night. He was getting up at 3 a.m. to work. So you can imagine how fun that was. And then leaving me to do motherhood during the night.
Oh.
And then in the day, he was like cranky as hell because he's not slept. And then, you know, we're also, you know, juggling with life savings. It was fun. It was a fun time. Not going to lie. If anything tested my mindset, it was that first year. It was a complete roller coaster.
I mean, yeah, and it's a roller coaster without all the other added pressures that you've just mentioned. So well done for surviving that. It's not fun.
Yeah, I'm alive. Yeah, I'm alive.
I want to take it back to getting pregnant now. We've actually spoken, we haven't spoken about it, but you mentioned it in one of our calls, one of our group calls that we had about getting pregnant and certain roadblocks that you had and then the miscarriage. Can you just talk to us a little bit about this experience, because I know so many people do struggle to either fall pregnant or hold on to a pregnancy, or, you know, that like they have lots of chemical miscarriages. Can you just tell us a little bit about your experience getting pregnant?
My experience with my own health has been going on for a really long time. So when I was like 20, I had like PCOS and stuff like this. I had really bad skin. Like you wouldn't believe that if I showed you a photo of my skin. Going back to like, you know, looking at food and going to doctors and, you know, this type of thing has been something that's been part of my life for a really long time. And I was on the pill for like, I think 12 or 15 years or something like that. So I think this also created, havoc with my system. When I started to get pregnant, I was looking to get pregnant. We miscarried our first child at around 10 weeks. And of course, everyone gives you the, it's your first, it's normal, it's common. And you just like want to rip their heads off and like tell them how absolutely devastating this is. And like, again, I was 38 at this point. So I'm worried about time and I'm worried about, you know, whether it's too late and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So when I miscarried, it was devastating for me. I really struggled with that. And I think some people can handle it better than others, depending on, you know, their situation, but I didn't do that well. Then we got pregnant again. And what happened was, by chance, I was at a friend's garden party and she was like, I was telling her about the miscarriage and she was like, oh, you should take aspirin and progesterone because they give that to people that are in IVF. They give it to them like to help keep the baby. And I'm like, okay, like fine. She's like, ask your doctor. So I'm like, okay. So I went to my doctor and I said to her, look, you know, this is what I've been told. What can I do it? And she was like, because you've had a miscarriage, I'll say yes. I'm not supposed to, but I'll say yes. I was like, okay. So I followed the progesterone and aspirin thing for the first 3 months and I had my son. And I was like, okay, that worked. Cool. You know, like, great. Then when we tried to have another child, so we waited about a year, year and a half, because I knew that I wanted two kids and I was hurtling towards 40 at a rate that wasn't very happy with. And so we started again. Now, because that wasn't explained to me, I took progesterone again because I still had it. I mean, you can get it from the pharmacy, I think, in Dubai, it was easy enough to get hold of. So I took it, thinking that it was a progesterone issue because it had never been explained to me. I didn't really understand why I was taking it. I just knew that it helped stop miscarriage. So I took progesterone. I lost the baby at 10 weeks, around 8 to 10 weeks, something like that. And then I realized that I hadn't taken the aspirin with it. I'd only taken the progesterone. Looking back, that was probably my best chance at having a natural second child, you know, like a natural birth without any problems. Anyway, so then I got pregnant again about 6 months later and it was a chemical pregnancy. So I didn't even get onto taking progesterone and aspirin because it was like 6 weeks or something. Like I lost it immediately. And then the next one was I took the progesterone and I took the aspirin, but the baby had genetic issues and we lost the baby around 4 months.
Oh, so sorry.
So it's been a journey. It really has been one that I just wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
I mean, it's pregnancy. It freaks me out more than anything else in the entire world. And I sometimes sit and look at my children. And I think how incredibly lucky I am to have been able to grow them, make them, birth them and have them. you know, the terminology chemical pregnancy, I didn't actually know about until, I think it was like 3 days ago, someone told me about chemical pregnancy and I was like, what the hell? And I've actually had two of those now. And again, after I had my first chemical pregnancy, before I had Isla, they put me on progesterone and aspirin. And again, I was just like, no one told me why I was taking it. Still to this day, I don't really understand why you should take it. No one explained to me if this was something that everybody should do or if I was lacking in something nutritionally. It's just this gray area that no one really ever discusses.
And they just kind of let you lose. And it's like, looking back on the last 4 years of this journey that I've been on, I wish I'd done some things differently. And I wish I'd asked the doctors better questions, because knowing what I know now about, and I'm sure that I know only a smidgen of what the reality of what you would need to know to have a healthy baby. But now what I know is that low levels of, progesterone can affect your child. Taking folic acid is not particularly the best thing for motherhood. Aspirin thins your blood because of other various reasons, and that can help the blood flow to the placenta. So in my case, I had a blood test recently, and I mean like in the last 3 months, and then we're 4 years in here. And what I tested with was a gene called the MTHFR gene. And everybody has this gene, and 50% of the population have a mutation of this gene. And this gene can cause a plethora of fun in your body that like no one knows what's going on. Okay. One of them being that it affects your blood flow. So it can create blood clots in your body. I have a gene mutation of MTHFR. And there's two things that it does. One is that it affects your homocysteine level. So that homocysteine in your body helps B12 and folate break down in your body. So when you eat B12 and folate, spinach and things like this, like it's coming in foods, the homocysteine is supposed to help break that down and build that in your body to help protein and it help, you know, everything in your body. If you've got a gene mutation, it stops that process from happening. And two things happen. One, it keeps the homocysteine up here in your body, in your system, so that you've got really high homocysteine levels because it's not breaking down properly. And it stops the absorption of B12 and folate, which means it's not getting into your system. So that causes havoc in itself. So that's a problem. And then on top of that, it can create blood clots. So to answer your question, why do you take aspirin? Is probably because something is going on and the blood needs to be thin to therefore stop blood clots. And the fact that 50% of people have this gene mutation, like it's really normal to have it. And it's a simple blood test that could be done before pregnancy. And I feel, hard done by that wasn't offered to me or understood after my first miscarriage, because it should have been, I feel. Because I don't feel like I need to go on a 4-year journey into understanding everything about the human body to be able to ask for a blood test that I want that can indicate why I personally need to take aspirin when I'm pregnant. And I could have a 2-year-old girl right now, and I don't because of that, because I wasn't given that answer.
And you only even started taking it because somebody just happened to mention it to you, not even a doctor.
Yeah, not literally a girl, my next door neighbor, who had had exactly the same problem and had had her second kid doing the same thing. It's insane. Like it is, it's just not a process that's conducive. And weirdly in Dubai, they love testing. So I don't know why they don't offer deeper insights. The other thing is like things like, you know, amino acid, your organic acid profile, your things are tested that are on a really basic level, like your thyroid, like they check your thyroid. Okay, great. But what happens with your B12 and your folate if you don't have, you need those things to be able to create a healthy baby, but they don't test them. They're not testing zinc. They're not testing your vital nutrients to check if everything's okay, unless you ask for it. So like, Knowing what I know now and what I knew then, I just wish I wasn't so naive and hope that everything would be fine and the doctors would do the best that they could for me. You know, I felt a bit like, oh, it's okay. She's only had 3-4 miscarriages. It's fine. You're like, it's not fine.
No, it's not fine. I mean, to be fair, no one should ever have to experience any, regardless of the stage. It's just, it's one of the worst things I think a woman can go through.
And I think that, you know, this narrative that goes around like, oh, it's really common. Like everybody said to me like, oh, it's really common. And like, oh, it happens a lot.
Just make it okay.
It doesn't make it easier, does it?
No, like no. This is a horrible thing that's happening to people and it doesn't need to happen. We can avoid it by checking the woman and checking. Of course, there's a level of like, you never know what nature's going to do. I get that. I understand that. But I think the preemptive stuff that's not being done is just like a shame. And especially when you get to, they let you have 3 miscarriages before they consider you like it's a recurring.
So this is something we need to work on and change.
It's unbelievable.
An episode on this is required.
Yeah.
We need to find someone. Yeah. We need to find someone.
Yeah. And I think you two both mentioned their chemical pregnancies. And I think it's not a term I'd heard of before either. So there must be so many people that will listen to this and not know. Yeah. So just to clarify, that is miscarriages before how many weeks? Like very early on, 5 weeks, 6 weeks?
Something like that. It's like it's basically like a missed period that comes late. You know, like mine came around 6 weeks, something like that, 6.5 weeks.
But they're different. And I think you can, you know that something is different because, so the first time I did it, I took a pregnancy test in the morning and by the evening I was starting to miscarry or the pregnancy was going or whatever we want to call it. The second time it happened, I never took a test and I was like, oh, I was thinking, well, I could be pregnant right now. But it's different because it comes on so slowly. I don't know if yours was the same, Deborah. It comes on so slowly that you think, oh, this could be implantation bleeding. And you have that weird moment where you're like, I don't know if I'm pregnant or I'm not pregnant. And then it just comes on more and more and more and more. And then you start passing like clots and it lasts forever. And I'm like, can we leave now? Can we stop insulting me? Just get out. Just go.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, more education needed on this for sure. Yeah. So thank you so much, Deborah, for sharing your story on this. My last question for you today. I mean, I feel like we have a million more questions and we could talk forever and ever, but we've been rattling on for a while now. If you were to leave us with one tip and one product, what would it be?
I think if you're, so let's say we're talking to mothers that potentially might want to have a business or want to are thinking about it. I would say that the best thing that you can do for yourself is to plan in advance and don't leave it to chance. So like make sure that you've thought the business idea through and you've thought about how much money you can make and how you're going to find your customers. Because if you don't do that, you're going to do that on the job and you're going to waste your time and your money. So planning it in advance is going to save you a lot. And one, what did you say? Product?
Yeah, one product. Can be anything. Business or motherhood.
What you want me to lean into? I like things like productivity, things like Asana and stuff like that. Like I use those types of stuff every day. What else do I use? I use Kajabi, which is like a platform for courses. And I love that because it puts everything in one place so you can speak to all your clients and all that type of stuff. Motherhood. What do I like? I don't know. Husbands that help.
Yeah. Is he a hands-on husband?
He is, yeah.
Good. He can stay. And Deborah, for anyone who wants to reach out and find you, where can they get in touch?
Best place is Instagram, DeborahHenning_official.
Love it. And you have a website as well. I'm going to link that in the show notes for anyone else who wants to get in touch via the website or email. And as always, everyone, you can find us on Instagram at We Are Mother Tongue. Deborah, you have been incredible. I've loved chatting with you. I could chat to you for ages. Honestly, maybe we'll just have a pack of part two. Yeah. I will be seeing you very soon. And Sarah, I recommend you do this. Yeah. Just FYI. Thank you for listening to this episode of Mother Tongue. We hope you enjoyed it. As always, please feel free to rate, review, subscribe and leave a comment. We always love to hear from you. Your support really means the world to us. And if you know any mums or mums-to-be who'd be interested in listening to our podcast, please feel free to share. You can also find us on Instagram at We Are Mother Tongue. Until next time, mamas.